The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on August 5, 1993 in Bangalore in Karnataka, India. The class begins with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 10, Verse 49 through 54.
কালয়ায় লাথা বাবা নন্দ রায় চারি পুত্র সঙ্গে পরে মহাপ্রভু পাই শ্রী চৈতন্য চরিতামৃত মধ্য লীলা চ্যাপ্টার 10 ফ্রম টেক্সট 49 দিস ইজ ওয়েন লর্ড চৈতন্য হ্যাড জাস্ট রিটার্নড ফ্রম হিজ টুর অফ সাউথ ইন্ডিয়া ব্যাক টু জগন্নাথ পুরি ট্রান্সলেশন At this time, Bhavananda Rai appeared with his four sons, and all of them fell down at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Purport, Bhavananda Rai had five sons, one of whom was the exalted personality known as Ramananda Rai. Bhavananda Rai first met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after his return from South India. At that time, Ramananda Rai was still serving at his government post. Therefore, when Bhavananda Rai went to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he went with his other four sons. They were named Vaninatha, Gopinatha, Kalanidhi, and Sudhanidhi. A description of Bhavananda Rai and his five sons is given in the Adilila, 10th chapter, 133rd verse. Sarvabhauma kohiyai raya bhavananda ihai pratam putra raya ramananda Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued, this is Bhavananda Rai, the father of Sri Ramananda Rai, who is his first son. Tabe mahaprabhu tare kailo alingan stuti kori kohi ramananda vivaran Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Bhavananda Rai and with great respect spoke of his son Ramananda Rai. Ramananda hena ratna jahara tanai tahar mohima loke khoena na jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu honored Bhavananda Rai by saying, quote, the glories of a person who has the jewel of a son like Ramananda Rai cannot be described within this mortal world. Sakhat pandu tumi tomar padni kunti, pancha pandav tomar pancha putra mahamati. You are Maharaj Pandu himself and your wife is Kunti Devi herself. All your highly intellectual sons are representatives of the five Pandavas. Rai kohi ami sudra vishayi adam, tabu tumi sparso e ishvara lakan. After hearing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's praise, Bhavananda Rai submitted, I am in the fourth class of the social order, and I engage in mundane affairs. Although I am very fallen, you have still touched us. This is proof that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5th chapter, 18th verse, Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavihastini suni chayavasya pakecha panditaha samadashina. Translation. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, outcast. Those who are highly advanced in spiritual understanding do not care about a person's material condition. A spiritually advanced person sees the spiritual identity of every living being. And consequently, he makes no distinction between a learned brahmana, a dog, a chandala, or anyone else. He is not influenced by the material body, but sees a person's spiritual identity. Consequently, Bhavananda Rai appreciated Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statement, which showed that the Roy did not consider the social position of Bhavananda Rai, who belonged to the Sudra class, engaged in mundane activities. Rather, the Lord considered the spiritual position of Bhavananda Rai, Ramananda Rai, and his brothers. The servant of the Lord is also similarly inclined. He gives shelter to any person, any living entity, regardless of whether one belongs to a Brahmana family or is a Chandala. The spiritual master reclaims all people, encourages everyone in spiritual life. By taking shelter of such a devotee, one can make his life successful, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18. Kirata hunandra pulinda pulkasa avira sumbhaya vanakasadaya yenye cha papaya rapasaya swaya sudyanti tasmai pravavishnave nama. Kirata, Huna, Andhra, Pulinda, Pulkasa, Abhira, Sumba, Yavana, and the Khasa races, and even others who are addicted to sinful acts, can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord due to his being the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Unquote. Whoever takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his pure devotee is elevated to the spiritual order and purified from material contamination. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9, chapter 32nd verse. Manghi pātabhyapāsitya yeti supāpayonaya striyo vaisyās tathā sudrās tepi antiparam gatim. Translation, O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, vaishyas, merchants, as well as sudras, workers, can approach the supreme destination. So here Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he was a sannyasi, Brahmana by birth, without hesitation he embraced Bhavananda Rai and his sons because they were great devotees of the Lord. Actually, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Sri Krishna himself, who came in Kali Yuga as his own devotee. He's showing how a pure devotee should act. Someone on the transcendental platform should see beyond the bodily distinction and see the spiritual stature. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had that transcendental. He showed by his example that vision. In response to that, Bhavananda Rai, he did the following. Nija griha vritta vritta pancha putra sane atma samapali atma samapilo ami tumar charane. Appreciating Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's favor, Bhavananda Rai also said, along with my home, riches, servants, and five sons, I surrender myself at your lotus feet. Purport. This is the process of surrender. As Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura sings, Manaso deho geho jokichu mor apilu tu apade nanda kishor. Saranagati. When one surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord, he does so with everything in his possession, his house, his body, his mind, and whatever else he possesses. If there is any obstruction to this surrendering process, one should immediately give it up without attachment. If one can surrender with all his family members, there is no need to take sannyas. However, if the surrendering process is hampered by the so-called family members, one should immediately give them up to complete the surrendering process. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a grihastha. He had wife, house, family. He was a collector under the British ICS service. But he was a pure devotee of the Lord. So he surrendered everything to Krishna. Manaso geho jeho jokichu mor arpilo tuva pode nanda kishore. Manaso, my mind, geho, my house, deho, my body, whatever I possess, I offer to you. Ambarish Das, disciple of Srila Prabhupada, is the great-grandson of Henry Ford, the inventor of the motor car company, the Ford Motor. So he surrendered to Srila Prabhupada and asked what he should do. Being an heir of the Ford dynasty, one could say, the Prabhupada said that you manage your hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars for Krishna. You manage carefully, and then he gave some service what he should do. So, surrendering to Krishna, when we give to Krishna, then Krishna, he gives back, all right, you take care of these things, but now you take care of them as my property. So they shouldn't be used for any sinful acts. So the process of surrender, just like in the previous feudal time, two kings would fight. Sometimes the one king would surrender to the other king and accept the other king as his emperor. And then that king would make a truce and, all right, I accept, I give back the kingdom to you, now you're my subordinate king. You have to pay me so much tax every year like that. That's not a very good example because there's no love there, but just for the sake that he's surrendering, but the emperor gives him back. All right, you manage the kingdom, but you have to do like this and like that. So sometimes people get confused. What does it mean to surrender to Krishna? We give everything to Krishna, but then Krishna, Guru, they again give back to our care, just like we give our body to Krishna. That doesn't mean we leave the body. But now we'll use the body in the way that Krishna wants. Actually, people surrender themselves partially for money to their employers, to their educational institutions, to the army. Sometimes people join the army, navy, they sign up 18-year bond. During that 18-year, they have to follow the military law. All these are business arrangements. But voluntarily, one accepts to restrict himself in these arrangements. But because he's expecting to get some pay. The difference in bhakti is one is doing it out of devotion, out of love for the Lord. Therefore, in the other arrangement, there's some limitation. But here, because it's out of love, there's no such limitation. One will always want to be serving the Lord 24 hours a day. So what are the rules for a grihastha? What are the rules for a brahmachari, for a banaprasthi, for a sannyasi? These are different. So everyone, according to their particular ashram, they act in a particular way. In the service of Krishna. This is the procedure that we follow for surrender. Yesterday there was an interview in Tiruvananthapuram with one professor, and he asked, what does it mean, the full surrender? And there was a discussion of Ambarish Maharaj, how he offered his thoughts, his words, his deeds, how he cleaned the temple floor. He looked at the deities with his eyes. He heard the lectures from the Shastra with his ears. He smelled the incense offered to the Lord with his nose and the flowers offered to the Lord. In this way, all the senses were absorbed. He tasted the prasadam. So although he was the emperor, he was fully absorbed in serving the Lord. So when there was when Ambarish was attacked by Durvasa Muni, then Durvasa Muni was put into great difficulty and eventually had to come back and surrender to Ambarish Maharaj. Kulashekara Alwar, he also followed the system of offering everything in the service of the Lord. So this process of bhakti yoga is also meant to be practiced in the home. But then one dedicates the house as a place of Krishna. Husband, wife, children, everyone should be trained to offer their service to Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was so strict. When his son ate a mango before it was offered to the Lord, he chastised it. That was meant to be offered to Krishna and you ate it. It was bhoga. It was unoffered food. You have taken the offering of the Lord. This is a very great offense. Then his son, who later became His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the great spiritual master, at a very young age, say under 10, he vowed that for my whole life I won't take mango because I committed this offense. And even in his, even when he was an acharya, he didn't take mango. He was so strict. He was trained by his parents that you should be offering your worship to Krishna. How can you be taking Krishna's offering? How can you eat before offering it? That type of training will stay with someone their whole life. Modern educational system sometimes becomes very arbitrary and people think that let the children do whatever they want. Don't be too restrictive. But the Vedic system was from age of 5 to 16, they should be very strictly trained. They should learn that discipline. But what they'll be trained? This is what everyone should be trained. The whole house should be Krishna conscious. That's the training they should be given. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to give this pure bhakti. So when he found here was a family of all devotees, he didn't care whether they were Sudra or whether they were Brahmana. He recognized these are all devotees of the Lord and he embraced them. Lord Chaitanya taught Kiva Vipra Kiva Nasi Sudra Kini Noi Jai Tattva Veta Jai Krishna Tattva Veta Sei Guru Hoy. Whether someone is born in a family of Brahmanas, or whether they're sannyasi, or whether they're born in a family of Sudras, if he knows the science of Krishna consciousness, then he is qualified to be a guru. The Vedas also in the Smriti Shastra confirms that Mantatantra Visarada Avaishnava Guruna Asyat Vaishnava Sapacha Guru. Even if someone is a very learned scholar in all mantras, tantras, in all types of agamas, but if he's not a devotee of the Lord, then he cannot truly be considered a guru. And if, even if someone is born in a family of dog eaters, outcast, a non-Vedic family, but if he knows, if he's a surrendered to the Lord, if he's a Vaishnava, then he can be a guru. We were reading yesterday, this morning actually, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how Devahuti, she was praying to her husband that I have had the good fortune of having you, Kardama Muni, he wouldn't say his name, but having you, my dear husband, who are a great self-realized soul. I had the good fortune to have you as my husband because you are someone who knows the purpose of life. You know, you can give someone liberation, but foolishly I spent my whole life with you simply trying to enjoy the sense gratification. And now you're about to leave and take sannyas because there was a promise that after he gave children to her, he could go. So he was about to go. So she was, just as he was seeing he was leaving, she was saying these words, that surely somebody is doing religious activities. Surely as someone is not leading their life for any religious purpose, they're as good as dead. And surely as someone is simply doing religious rituals, but however, it does not leading to renunciation from material sense gratification, they're also as good as dead. And if someone is renounced, but their renunciation doesn't lead to pure devotion to the Lord, to Lord Krishna, then they are good as dead. So in this way, I wasted my valuable time with you in very temporary and materialistic pursuits. And now you're about to leave, so I'm very concerned. How will I achieve liberation? How will I get the lotus feet of Krishna? You please bless me how I can achieve this, the real purpose of life. So here was a wife, husband was about to take sannyas. Normally we think if this would happen, most wives might say, don't leave me. Who will feed me? Who will take care of the children? Who will pay the rent? Who will do this? Who will do that? How will I be happy? They'll be thinking, you know, how can I be alone? They'll think so many different things. But here Devahuti, she's thinking that my husband is leaving. He's a great rishi. How will I get liberation? But I spent, as a wife, I was serving him. I was giving him material service, but I didn't get the real thing he has to offer me, which is the liberation, which is the spiritual consciousness, spiritual knowledge. Now he's going. You see what an elevated soul she was. So, of course, she was blessed with a son who was the incarnation of Godhead, Kapila Deva. And Kapila Deva then gave her all instruction. So, we should understand what is the actual purpose of human life. We may experience so many material happinesses and material sufferings. We may do so many religious rituals. Sometimes we may do many penances, but the ultimate objective is to get God consciousness, to get the consciousness of Krishna. When that is achieved, everything is a success. And until that's achieved, our life is incomplete. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appreciated families, he appreciated different people according to how they were developed in their consciousness about Krishna. So from the childhood to the household life to all the phases of life, that should be promoted, that should be developed. And when one is fully convinced and they can simply surrender to Krishna, that I'm giving everything to you, then that doesn't mean that after that, okay, now it's all Krishna's and I have nothing to worry about. Now I can just lie down and Krishna will feed me. It's a dynamic type of surrender. We are giving to Krishna, now we have to use everything as Krishna's. You find nowadays sometimes you tell people, don't smoke, it's going to give you lung cancer, it's going to give you various types of problems. They say, it's my body. If I want to die of cancer or TB or whatever, I'll do whatever I want. See, so people think, it's my body, if I want to destroy it, I can destroy it. But, see, the devotee, when he surrenders the body to Krishna, that means that now, Krishna, this is your body. I have to use this body for your service. Once I stepped on a nail when I was living in the temple in Montreal, and Prabhupada wrote me a letter and said, you have given your body to Krishna. You have to take care of it properly. Don't allow it to get, you know, holes punched in it and all these things. You take care of it and see that it gets cured very quickly. You have to take care because it's not your body. It's Krishna's. Now it's Krishna's property. Someone, if they loan you their car, you'll be more in anxiety. If I get an accident, this, that, my friend, what do you think? Right. So, when we give to Krishna, then we're getting back on loan. Actually, this is the reality because everything is Krishna's. What we're giving to Krishna, we're only actually accepting the reality that yes, everything is yours, Krishna, and now I'll use everything for you. When we do that, then we actually achieve liberation immediately. This is a transcendental position. And as long as we're thinking this is me and this is mine, that is tying us down to the bondage of the material world. Fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is explained, yajnatat karmano anyatra karma loko yam karma bandhana, that yajna should be served. Vishnu should be served by our karmas. All work should be done as a sacrifice for Vishnu. Yajnatat karmano anyatra, other anything else, loko yam karma bandhana, is simply a cause of our bondage in the material karmic law. Krishna gives a very wide scope of things we can do for Him. When we do, under the guidance of the Guru, our activities for Krishna, then we are not bound by the laws of karma. As soon as we want to do something outside of Krishna consciousness, lokoyam karma bandhana, we are bound up by the laws of karma. So, this regard, Baninath Bhavananda Rai, now he's continuing to speak to Lord Chaitanya. He's pushing forward one of his sons. Hey Baninata Rohibe Tuma Chorone Jabe Jayagya Taha Koribe Sevone. This son Baninata will remain at your lotus feet to always immediately attend to your orders and serve you. Atya Gane More Sankochna Koribe Jay Jabe Icha Tabe Sayagya Dibe. My dear Lord, please consider me. Sri Dharmananda Rai is coming within 5 to 7 days. As soon as he arrives, my desires will be fulfilled. I take great pleasure in his company. Saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Bhavananda Rai. The Lord then touched the heads of his sons with his lotus feet. Tabe Mahaprabhu Tare Gore Patailo Baninata Patanayake Nikote Rakilo. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then sent Bhavananda Rai back to his home, and he kept only Baninath Patanayak in his personal service. So, we'll end this reading here tonight. This is pastime. Lord Chaitanya returning to Jagannath Puri. This was just one part where he met Bhavananda Rai and his four sons. The fifth son, Ramananda Rai, was the governor of Godavari district. At that time, it was under the king of Orissa. Now it's under Andhra Pradesh. Godavari. Any questions? He would go every day, and there'd be a big crowd in the temple, so he'd be there in the back of the temple. He's 7 feet tall, so he can look over everybody's head. No problem. Apart from that, of course, he has always the spiritual vision. He used to stand there by the side of the Garuda Stamba sometimes, and when he was touching the Garuda Stamba, he melted the stone Stamba. And his fingerprints are there inside the stamba. Of course, sometime it also said he would go closer to the deities. When there was a big crowd, he would stay in the back. Who can say why the Lord does what he does? He's independent. We can only know what he does and appreciate that. Any other question? We get attracted to the things of the material world. That's quite natural, living in a material life. Until we become very advanced in Krishna consciousness, that's the normal situation that people find themselves in. They find the mind being attracted to material things. What we have to do is keep our mind controlled by engaging in Krishna service until we develop a taste for Krishna, and then spontaneously we'll be attracted to things of Krishna consciousness. There's a reversal of our mental direction from being attracted to material things to being attracted to Krishna. That happens at an advanced level in Krishna consciousness, but it happens gradually also. As we advance, we become more detached from material sense gratification and more attached to Krishna consciousness. We shouldn't expect that just as soon as we begin our devotional service, there'll be no attraction for the material world. That attraction will be there. Therefore, we have to control our mind, control our senses, and very positively engaging them in devotional service. Therefore, we have to also be very careful. We have to follow strictly the rules and regulations, have a good association, knowing that the senses are very strong and the attachments are there, lying dormant, or not so dormant as the case may be. As we become more advanced in Krishna consciousness, that taste changes and we become mad after Krishna. That time we forget about these material attachments. That says that a very advanced devotee, he does his material family affairs very responsibly, but internally he is more attached to Krishna. That's the advanced stage. Nobody can tell from outside that he's not an ordinary attached householder. But internally he's actually always thinking about Krishna. He's maintaining his wife and family members also out of love for Krishna. And that love for Krishna is much more prominent than the attachment that he feels for other things. So this is the whole perfection of practicing bhakti yoga. And it's a gradual process. By strictly following the process, then these stages should be achieved. Sometimes attachments can be eradicated by knowledge. We realize it's an illusion. So by knowledge we can become more detached. But that alone is not enough. That produces renunciation. But renunciation without devotion to Krishna is not permanent. So simultaneously we also need to have our love for Krishna. That's why only the jnana is not enough. Along with the jnana we also need the bhakti vedanta. Both are needed. Then we have the perfect combination. If you're dovetailing it, whatever devotee does, he does very enthusiastically. So devotee is expert. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was the collector. Said he was, in those days, the collector was simultaneously judicial and executive magistrate. Later it was divided and it became a district judge and a collector, but at the initial, he was both. So all murder cases, dacoity, everything would come up to him. So he became so expert at doing his material affairs. Because most people, they're just 9 to 5, they think how I can just cut the time, do my work or something. Or they're just absorbed in the work, they don't have any other objective. His objective was do my job very efficiently. Because I'm a devotee, I had to do my duty properly. And then finish up and then give more time I can give to Krishna. So he did his collector duty so nicely that said by half the day, he'd finished a full day's work. What would take other judges a very long time to come to a decision, he'd finish it in just a few hours or a few in a short time, write his judgment and give the verdict on the spot. And you think, oh, he's doing it very hastily, but actually they say that hardly any of his cases were overturned. Because the points of law were so accurate and to the point. So he became very expert. And he did his service very nicely. And then he gave maximum time to Krishna consciousness. So like that, Grihastha, if he's dovetailing some material activity for maintaining his family and that, they become expert to do that, depending what their specific objective is. Someone, they want to make more money to give to Krishna, or someone wants to free more time, do their service and maintain their family and give more time for doing some particular kind of devotional service directly. According to their particular program, they do their material job, their dovetail service, as you described it, very efficiently. And then they go on and do whatever else they are supposed to do. In other words, a devotee doesn't neglect everything he's doing out of devotion. Whatever he's doing is, if it's worth doing, it should be done well. If it's not worth doing, then why do it? Why waste time? I had one disciple said that I'm a Vaishya, I like to do business, I want to be like Arjuna was a Kshatriya for Krishna, let me be a Vaishya for Krishna. Make money and give it to Krishna. And actually, he does that. He gives money to Krishna. So, danger is always there of entanglement. That's why we have to always be careful. Different people have different nature. Someone may be working in some ordinary job. They may not be able to make too much money, but still they should give something to Krishna. But maybe they can do also some service. These things we have to see according to the propensity, the whole, it's individual matter. There are certain guidelines that the Shastra gives us. After that, just like a doctor has to see each patient, you can't say, okay, everyone here, all the same patients, we'll all give you the same medicine. Everyone has got a different problem, a different in a hospital. But you don't need doctor. Everyone comes in, you just give them the same medicine. Everyone can have their kidney operated on, or everyone can have their, you see. It won't, obviously that won't work. Everyone has individual circumstance. What degree are they ready to surrender? What are their propensities? Even are they properly engaged at present? See, some people are doing what they like to do. Some people are doing something just to survive. They're hardly able to survive. There's so many circumstances, so we have to deal with that on an individual basis. Principle is to do our activities for Krishna under the guidance of the gurus according to the Shastra. Hare Krishna.
So here in this first paragraph of his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains the meaning of Buddha Yoga. How Buddha Yoga is action in Krishna consciousness. Applied intelligence. Applying our intelligence to the process of devotional service is considered the highest intelligence. People use intelligence for everything we do. But a different quantity of intelligence may be required for different kinds of activities. Intelligence is used when someone makes a basket or a cane chair. But it may require more intelligence to design a computer chip or more intelligence to send a rocket or a satellite to outer space, or intelligence to compose a symphony, Jai Krishna Balaram Ki, or make a painting. But highest intelligence is acting in Krishna consciousness. Because to understand the ultimate goal of life is a much higher intelligence, just as much as if someone did some very elaborate preparation for a big festival, but made the mistake of getting the day wrong. Although so much energy was put into making the festival arrangement, but instead of observing on, say, August 26th, isn't that the day of independence or something? August 15th. He did it on the 26th, 11 days later. People, what a fool. Or you do someone's birthday, but the person already passed away. We work so hard in material life, but if we miss what's the goal of life, then we miss everything. Just like that simple story about the ferryman and the scientist, where the scientist was pointing out to the boatman in the river, you know, the cumulus clouds? He said, I know, you know the fish, do you know, what was it called, physiology? Or zoology? You know, botany. He's a ferryman. He doesn't know all this. He's saying, I know how to row the boat. You know about meteorology. That's a cumulus cloud. said, "Looks to me like a storm cloud, like a typhoon. My dear scientist, do you know how to swim? Because it looks like we're going to be knocked over, blown over by the wind." And the scientist said, "No, I don't know how to swim." Then the boat was blown over by the huge typhoon, and the fisherman, the ferryman, he jumped into the water, started swimming. He said, "Well, then 100% of your life is wasted." So many ways that's been shown in skits, short dramas. Just to illustrate, we can know everything. We can know so many things, but if we miss that, what is the goal of life? And what is the value? It's like putting so many zeros, one after another, hundreds, thousands, millions, billions, trillions, zillions of zeros. But unless you put the one in front of it, then it doesn't have any value, it remains zero. Once you have the goal, then everything else becomes valuable. Otherwise, at the end of life, whatever we do, it's finished. Zero. Back to a start. So Buddha Yoga means the person knows what is the goal and he is progressing step by step towards the goal. That's real intelligence. All activities are aimed at achieving the ultimate goal of life. So Prabhupada said, when we know that the goal is Krishna and the goal is assigned, then we slowly but progressively, we traverse it. Even if someone is slowly but surely progressing. But the point is that you know the goal and you're step by step, you're progressing towards it. Then eventually you reach the ultimate goal. If you don't know the goal, then you won't be progressing towards it. Prabhupada continues that when a person knows the goal of life, but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculation to understand Krishna, he is acting in Jnana Yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in Bhakti Yoga or Buddhi Yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. This paragraph, Prabhupada gives an explanation of different yogas in relationship with achieving the goal of life. Every yoga is result-oriented. Is to achieve the result of the goal of life. Someone knows what is the goal if he is a yogi. If he's not doesn't know the goal of life, he cannot be called a yogi. Someone who is just trying to enjoy the senses or get the fruits of his activities is a karmi or a bhogi. He is a material worker who has to suffer and enjoy the results of his actions. But when someone knows the goal of life is to achieve Krishna, but some attachment is still there to fruitive activities. So he does the fruitive activities, but he offers the results of those activities to Krishna. That is called karma yoga. Many people get bewildered. They think that if I work hard, it's karma yoga. So many people are working hard. Does it mean every person is a karma yogi? Simply by working hard. This is not a proper understanding. A person has to know what is the goal of yoga and be working to achieve that. Be working and giving some fruits of the work to Krishna. Then it becomes karma yoga. There's a connection with the goal. You see people, well, why do you chant Hare Krishna? I prefer Karma Yoga. Work hard, watch TV, go to sleep, Karma Yoga. Bas. It's not Karma Yoga, just working hard. Working hard and offering the fruit to Krishna, somehow you have to connect it with Krishna. Then it becomes Karma Yoga. Jnana Yoga, they know Param Brahma is absolute truth, Krishna is the absolute truth. They are trying to achieve the Param Brahma through mental speculation. All yogis know that there is a supreme truth. They know there is a supreme goal. Even Shankaracharya recommended worshipping Vishnu. Others also, but one of five deities he recommended, one was Vishnu. Shankaracharya stated, Narayana Parobhyaktar. Narayana is transcendental to the impersonal realization. He also said, of course, Bhajo Govinda. Bhajo Govinda, Bhajo Govinda Mudamate. Even the impersonalist knows that Govinda is the supreme goal, but their process is through mental speculation. Bhakti Yoga means that the Bhakti Yogi or Buddhi Yogi, he uses his intelligence, his mind, his body to serve Krishna. He does what Krishna wants. Therefore, that bhakti yoga is complete yoga, Prabhupada explained. Complete, because it completely involves the yogi. Mon kai bakko. Mind, body, and word are all engaged in the service of Krishna. It's a complete yoga because it completely connects one with Krishna. Karma yogis, jnana yogis, they have some separate interest. Karma yogis attached to the results of activities, or to fruit, at least to fruitive activities, even he surrenders the result. He likes to do what he likes to do, has not surrendered to do what Krishna wants him to do. The bhakti yogi only does what is authorized by the Guru and Krishna. Doesn't want to do anything which is not blessed by the Guru. Wants to do everything in the attitude of service to Krishna. Because in that way, one is completely under the shelter of Krishna all the time. Grihe thako, bone thako, sada hari bole dako. Whether grihastha or whether in the renounced order, we should always be engaged in chanting and hearing the holy names of Krishna. The bhakti yogi, he's leading his life 24 hours centered around Krishna. Therefore, it's a complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. If we achieve bhakti yoga, that bhakti yoga is not different than the status of a soul in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, everyone is a bhakti yogi. If we practice bhakti yoga here, we are as good as in Vaikuntha. Gita says that mancha yoga vicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitaitam brahmabhuvai kalpate. By practicing bhakti, we are immediately on the platform of Brahma. Also another Vedic shloka is there that says that when we are engaging our thought, word and deed in Hari Dasya, in the service of Hari, Jivan Mukta Suchita, even while living, we are considered liberated. So to achieve bhakti yoga means it's already the highest perfectional stage of life. That's why in the previous paragraph Prabhupada was saying, even we progress slowly, the more we can completely be absorbed or situated in bhakti yoga, the more we are achieve perfection. In the last paragraph, Prabhupada explains, a person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but still, if he is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately to attain him. In other words, someone, even if they say, well, I'm not so intelligent to do all these things. But Prabhupada states, even if one's not intelligent enough to make the progress on the path of self-realization, but if they're sincere and they work for Krishna, they devote their activities in devotional service, anyway the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately to attain him. He gives the intelligence how to come. Even one doesn't have the intelligence, Krishna is going to give the intelligence. So it's not a valid point to say, well, I don't have enough intelligence, because if you don't have, all the more reason then you should do devotional service, because Krishna will give you the intelligence if you do devotional service to him. There was Kolavicha Sridhar. He was a hawker of bananas. He was a banana cultivator, and he used to go every day in the market and sell his bananas in Bengal. Everyone has bananas in Bengal. It's not a very high profit commodity. But he would, with 50% of his income, he would serve Mother Ganges. Because he got the order from Guru to serve the Mother Ganges with 50% of his income. So he would go, and every day he would do Ganga Puja with whatever profit he had. He'd 50% use for his family, 50% he'd worship the Ganges. Because he did this regularly, although he was not very sophisticated, Jai Krishna Balaram, Jai Nitai Gaur, he could achieve the perfection of life. Many examples like that.